Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to episode 87 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am the real Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And back on the couch with us again, Mr. Jamie Lovett is here.
How's it going?
It's almost Turkey Day, guys. It's time for that Thanksgiving holiday, but, or it has been that Thanksgiving holiday, rather.
Yeah.
Who knows what the time is?
We have to send it time.
But, yeah, it's still the holiday. So if you guys are ducking out on family, I hope you're ducking out with us and listening to our latest podcast, because we got some good things to talk about today. Because today we are going to discuss some of that Avengers Endgame deleted scene footage that, there was somebody. We had Mr. Brandon Davison here. He's going to be joining us later. But I just realized there was a reason why I had him here in the beginning. But he dipped out on us, and he'll be back because he's going to help us talk about The Walking Dead mid-season finale at the end of the show. But first, we are going to talk about some Avengers Endgame deleted scenes. We also got some new Star Wars footage to look at. And we are also going to be reviewing the new Marvel Dawn of X books that they dumped out from time for the holidays. We have New Mutants number 2, Fallen Angels number 2, and X-Force number 2. So we are going to discuss that.
Booyah.
All right. Starting right at the top, we thought we might have been done with this whole Avengers Endgame Infinity War saga, but, we're comicbook.com, and like this is like that scene in Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not going.
So it won't.
He's not going away. I think they're just going to keep riding this out until we get to, you know, Disney's next billion-dollar, big $2 billion success story with Star Wars in December.
It's always in.
But, we've had new revelations. I can't even track. Where has all this come from? Like, the art book was one thing that came out. Where did all these deleted scenes that had, like, all the deleted scenes and whatnot and unused concept art?
I think it was when they uploaded to Disney Plus. There was some stuff on there. And then there was some more like, when they released the art book, seems like a bunch of the concept artists who worked on the film started feeling like time to empty the library.
Yeah, there must be an official cutoff point where they're like, now you can talk.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, because it helps promote the
everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
That's gonna see.
Yeah.
Literally everybody in the world.
Yeah, and they're like, we want another promotional push. So concept artists, take to Instagram. And they're like, yeah, and sure enough. So we've gotten like a lot of kind of looks at cool stuff that could have, should have, maybe would have been in the movie, but ultimately got cut. And I just wanted to take a minute and run through some of the stuff and ask you guys, like, what did you think was cool? What did you guys think, like, are glad that they cut?
I love deleted scenes. I love seeing some of that footage and everything. But everything I have seen thus far, I am glad that, like, it didn't, either the movie didn't need it or the movie's better without it. I haven't seen anything that's been like, oh yeah, I wish that was in there. Like, because even some of the, I know we had talked before about a scene where like a lot of the stuff revolves around Tony and that like final act and all that. And there's so many little like emotional things that they tried to push in there and ultimately they left out, and it's just, it's better for it. You know, some of the concept art, is kind of cool. But again, like, I haven't seen anything that makes me wish that those things were in there. I'm pretty happy with the way the movie came out. Like, my issues with the movie have nothing to do with, like, oh, this character didn't show up or this costume. It's all timey-wimey stuff, if you will. Like, it's all that stuff. And so, you know, the concept art's cool, but I still haven't seen anything that makes me go, yes, that should have been in there. I don't know how you feel.
I mostly agree with you. I mean, that movie was long already.
Yes.
most of the biggest stuff they've shown is stuff that is kind of schmaltzy, like the Morgan scene in the Soul Stone, and this came out before, but the thing where everybody takes an E for Tony.
Yeah, that one.
Like, oh, let's not bring that up. Don't you bring that up. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
The one thing that might have been good to have in there is the stuff where we get to see Hulk being a hero, because he seemed to be like the acceptable casualty of this movie, where they were like, we're going to make this movie long enough to fit in everybody's story arc. Sorry, Bruce, yours is happening off screen in between movies, basically.
Yeah.
So it might have been nice to see a little bit more of that, because it feels like he was just bad and then he got better, and we didn't really see any of that progression. Beside that, kind of happy with everything being left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel. You know, some of the alternate costumes we've seen are cool, but again, I like the final designs.
I feel like I missed something. There were like four different concept arts of other people wearing Iron Man's armor. Was that just going to be a big thing in the movie?
That's the one aspect that, like, I don't think the movie needed it, but I would love to hear, like, the why, like, where that fit in, why that fit in Doctor Strange wearing that armor, because that admittedly looked kind of cool. And like, the armor is on him during the Ebony Maw torture scene, because you can see, like, you know, it's that sequence and he's just wearing armor. So, you know, and there's another scene where it's like forms around the stone, and I'm like, okay, I would like to hear. I'm amazed we haven't heard it out of the 900 interviews they've done.
I can conceive of how that sequence plays out as the cloak, and they use the alien thing, the aliens reference, to suck him out. But I could also see how Tony could have like jumped in and like sent his armor onto Doctor Strange to like protect him, and then weaponize him, you know, and quickly turn the tables on him. And like, blast him. So, I mean, I can see that. For myself, I think what I think I've enjoyed the most is just seeing the concept art of things they cut, like small character moments have been the most interesting for me. Like, there was a sequence where Hulk and Black Panther, they were going to do a remix of the Hulk and Thor thing from the first Avengers in Endgame's final battle, where basically Hulk beats T'Challa's armor to kind of store up that kinetic energy and make him into like a bomb that he uses to blow up like one of those Chitauri, like whatever you call worms or whatever the hell they're called. Like, that would have been cool. Nakia, Lupita Nyong'o's character, Nakia from Black Panther was also featured in some concept art of being part of the kind of A-Force moment. Yeah. And there's like a bunch of these. If you go through our archives on Avengers Endgame, on like, Shuri and Tony Stark were going to have a moment. Like, and
Was there something with Ant-Man doing a fastball special?
Yeah,
because that like is that. Personally offensive to me.
Oh, I thought you were going to be happy about that one.
No.
No, that belongs in one...
in only one Marvel place.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm with you.
Yeah, so there, if you read through our archives, there's a lot of that stuff that would have been cool, just added character moments that, you know, I could get. You could spend an entire movie just being like, here's one battle. Look at all these cool character interactions. But I get it. You got to strip it down for time. And as we go back through this, especially in HD, there are so many like little Easter eggs already in there that like people are finding again and again, like how effective Mantis was. Like, you think Mantis, like, what is she running at? And then you see her like taking down the big, crazy, disgusting monsters using her mental powers and things like that. And giant man stepping on bodies that are crushed and flying and stuff. Like, so there's a lot of detail in there, but it's hard not to say, oh, okay, well, that like Thor, that Black Panther Hulk thing would have been cool.
That,
like,
one's cool. Yeah. It's just, you look at, you know, a lot of these, you look at it and go, what were they going to take out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this thing is already too full.
And we you could take out the whole, there's a lot you could take out in the beginning.
Like, well, that's all I agree. And two, it would, now, if we were talking about like, oh, could you release like an extended cut or something?
No.
I mean,
I think,
do you think they'll ever do that?
10 years and they haven't yet.
I mean, if they didn't actually put this stuff, I think a lot of this is concept art that they didn't actually film, like a lot of it they didn't actually film. So let's not go Snyder cut with this. Like, we got a film. It's finished. The Russos are done.
Like, start your petitions now.
Yeah. But one thing I thought that would be interesting was there was some room, because the other big thing I thought was interesting was just seeing how deep of a backstory they gave to Thanos in this, and just really getting the full scope of this. Like, we saw concept art of his entire family, of him at ages 13 and like 17 and 22. There would have been a much longer sequence about the fall of Titan, basically like a, you know, Superman origin. Like
you would have seen it. Yeah.
And you would have seen him and his family. And I think there's, in key places, there is enough material to spin out into something else and to kind of reconnect to that, to the whole experience in that universe. Like, I would one day like to see this Thanos thing, whether it's just like an animated short or something like that, using a kind of concept art and, you know, concepts and animators to keep it on the cheap, but just show like what happened on the fall of Titan and things like that.
I feel like that would have been nice. I don't know that it's necessary. It's one of those things where it's
no,
like...
No, I absolutely do not want this in this
rule
film.
Rule of storytelling, like, start as late as possible.
Exactly. Kind of like, deal. I even wrote this in the article because I did about his family and his different ages. Like, I think it's much more effective to kind of use inference and reactions from people. And so, like, in Infinity War, giving that sequence, the storytelling sequence with the Reality Stone, is a lot more effective. Just showing you like what it looked like and what it looks like now.
Yeah.
And, you know, him telling his version of the story and how he sees it. That's all that's really important.
Yep.
Like his megalomaniacal view of I'm right and this is justified. It's all you really need. But like, that's what I said. There's so much on the cutting room floor that there are, I think, places to spin them out. And obviously they're doing that with like Loki and stuff like that. But I would like to see like the Thanos backstory kind of... Thanos of Titan, or like, as I said, on the cheap, just like as a CGI animated, you
know,
Marvel.
That'd be a really good, like, animated one-shot.
Exactly. Yeah. Throw it on Disney Plus, drum up some things, and that would be good. Give Josh Brolin a chance to come back and do something.
I'd love to see that. Yeah, absolutely.
And you could even set up things like, I don't know, you could set up, like, a Son of Thanos, whatever you want to do, like, throw the first seeds in there for that, so to speak, no pun intended. But, so, I mean, there's room for that. But on the whole... Like, yeah, I would have loved to see Nebula's hair, too. The Hulk thing, heroic, I would have also liked to see some of that. But again, I went to the re-release.
Awesome
scene. And I saw that scene, and I can never unsee. I can never unsee. I swear to God, it's like the episode of The Simpsons where they do Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie, and they edit Homer out in the end. And like it's just a still like cartoon. Yeah. That's what it looks like. So I can't ever unsee that Hulk thing. So,
But they were going to do the Nebula Gauntlet moment, too, at some point, weren't they?
Yeah, that was also that would be been, part of it.
They even teased that.
Yeah, they teased
that
a lot.
So many interviews.
Like,
and,
Yeah, Loki was going to get a different death. They were going to redesign Morad or whatever that planet is from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
They almost brought all the heroes back before the epic fight with Thanos, which would have been just a quagmire of character moments and dialogue. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Like I said, you got to go into our Avengers Endgame section on comicbook.com and just look at all this. It's just like a list of kind of interesting anecdotes. I got to say, these aren't like, I mean, we have to write up some real crazy stuff sometimes. Like, and we've beaten this horse to death, but this was like rare where we were actually seeing the articles and seeing the stuff. And I was like, okay, well, this is actually interesting to like, read about and just kind of know about just as a novelty. But like, yeah, we're not doing theories. Like, here's a theory about the number of portals, and it tells you what the next Marvel villain's going to be because I counted 17 and there's only one set. Like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. So, like,
no, that's next year.
Yeah, that's next year. No, stop it.
Gotta say something after the holiday rush.
Oh, good. Oh, man. Click Get ready. 2020. All right. So, yeah. Oh, this one was interesting. Just before we move off this, the Wakanda army almost had Batman suits, like Batman style Panther suits. Yeah. Yeah, that would have been kind of cool, actually. Like,
really?
That would have been, yeah, that would have been kind of cool. To see a bunch of men in Panther suits looking like Batman running out. Oh,
Wakanda,
man.
Just throwing around that vibranium money, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, but costume budget would have swelled with that, you know. Good thing about African garb or Mystic Art garb is it's cheap. You can get it on the cheap. So, let's keep that there. But, like I said, check out our whole section of Avengers Endgame for all these anecdotes about, like, all the deleted scenes and concepts they didn't use and all that good artwork, because the artwork is pretty gorgeous. And hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation if you want to talk about any of this or if there's something you knew, you spotted, that you thought was really interesting. Moving right along. So, We now have a new TV spot for Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, and it shows Rey using the Force. It shows a bunch of them in possible peril. They're all screaming each other's names. yeah, which is kind of funny and interesting.
Your description of this is probably better than the TV spot.
Yeah, that's because I'm watching TV spot right now for the first time. Because I'm so prepared. But, this looks pretty good. Like, a pretty good TV spot. You see Rey doing some Force stuff. But I did see this online because at one point it looks like Rey is screaming for Chewie. And she looks, like, really upset. And people were like, oh, damn it, they're going to kill Chewie. I know it.
I feel like I have deja vu because everyone was super convinced he was going to die based on a TV spot before The Force Awakens came out, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Well, maybe they just wanted to play with you. Nope. Maybe they just wanted to play with you then. They're like, we're going to kill him. Nah. Psych, we're going to kill him.
But like, it's J.J. Abrams,
people were
right?
Like,
he'll kill. Like, he's going to kill somebody by the end
of
this.
Yeah. No, I would say a lot of the – I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the old guard dies off.
That's like, kind
of
his – It's like Chewie dies. A rep for that.
I mean, I would love to see the very last scene of Star Wars, the Skywalker saga, like Chewie and a Porg, like just chilling somewhere.
I would watch. Put
hang up his bow, like his crossbow blaster, and just be like, man, take off his bandolier, and just be like, I'm
retires
done.
To a farm on another planet.
Yeah, he just sits down on a farm and just sighs, and it's the end of the movie.
Grateful universe,
with his bandolier and crossbow hanging on a scarecrow in the background. That would be great. It's just like,
wow.
That would be an ending.
Someplace weird.
This is the ending I want.
Chewie, just like, man, I'm done. Just go.
Chilling with a Porg.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say something about seeing like Luke and Leia as a Force ghost or something like that.
No, I mean, that's how it's going to end. We all know that. So it's going to be every Force ghost ever. Yeah. Like, just being like, peace, bro. Like, but I would just love it to just see like a cut to like, Chewie in a big sky, like a tree hut up there, looking at all that. Like, man, crazy times we had. You just get some weird pipe out, like Bilbo Baggins. Throws on some, like, cantina music and just jumps
I love it. He sees his wife and children that he abandoned decades ago to go hang out with Han Solo.
Boy, that
like,
got dark.
Chewie, where have you been? And he's like, maybe I've been saving the universe.
Why does it sound like that now?
I guess I just mean Chewie has that swagger. I guess it's like, cool. I just assume that's how he would be with his lady, you know? Like,
oh,
come on.
My God, man.
But, we veered way off the path.
Yeah. All of this, by the way, is more interesting than the TV spot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the TV spot's not much, but it is just a little bit of something, the whole thing of them in peril has got people freaking out. They're like, who's going to die? Somebody's dying. Everybody's screaming for everybody. I would put my money on somebody like Chewie, 3PO, having to sacrifice Chewie going down. And I think at least one of the main cast will die.
I mean, I expect that Leia will die.
I mean, Leia will be dead.
But because also, you got Han Solo dies in the first one and Luke dies in the second one. It just seems like the pattern they're going for.
Yeah, I also think they go back to, I believe the rumors that they go back to Poe's home planet. Yavin, and where they planted, in canon, his parents planted that Force tree, and I think that's the whole woodland sequence with Rey. I think that's why she gets training, because that place is so strong with the Force that's where like Leia appears. She'll be a Force ghost, but it'll be like more than a Force ghost.
Yeah,
it'll be like this is where their presence can cross over, or whatever we want to call it, and then we'll see all kinds of cameos or something like that.
I think C-3PO or RDD2, if not both. I think they're the ones that will like shock people that like, oh, they're gone, and they're gone like midway through. Like, I feel like they're the ones that Abrams does that. I'm gonna throw all of you, and just like midway through the movie, like they're done, and like they're so beloved, even though they're not human, they're so beloved that like fans will flip. I think it's something like that, because
I can see that
for R2.
Like, it's definitely based on the footage we've seen, it definitely seems like a return to the adventure-heavy style of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
That stuff that made everything that rubbed people, old Star Trek fans wrong about his Star Trek movies is exactly why his Star Wars movies work well, because all that high adventure stuff is perfect for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It didn't make as much sense for Star Trek.
And also, like, I don't know anybody who saw that, like, Klingon raid scene, like, when they went to the Klingon planet and into darkness and wasn't like, so this is a Star Wars movie. Okay.
Yeah.
okay, sure, JJ just really wants to do Star Wars. I mean, we all said it right then. And that's, like, what helped, I think, like, just propel him. People were like...
Because then the people were like, hey, he just made a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember there was that interview with him on The Daily Show where he was like, I didn't really watch Star Trek. I was really into Star Wars. And we were all like, we know. We can tell.
Like, yeah. Yeah, no. So, yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, yeah, there is an epic amount of adventure in this one. I mean, the forest planet. I mean, it's classic Star Wars. We got an ice planet. We got a forest planet. We got a desert planet. And those desert, I was kind of questioning those desert speeders with the that actually have, like, treads in the front.
Mm. Yeah.
But then I saw the first clip from the movie, and I was like, okay, that's really freaking cool that they have, like, rocket-propelled stormtroopers on the back. And they actually, like, that's why they're not floating, so they can actually, like, dip and, like, catapult them into the air.
That stuff, like those
they
clips
can fly
from,
now, and it actually looks funny. They can fly now. They can fly now.
Yeah,
like, those clips from the spots and even and the other trailers. I've like those are really what like make me want to see it because those look extremely fun. And you know that is one area probably that you know I really love The Last Jedi more than Force Awakens, but that's one area that I did kind of miss in Last Jedi was those.
There's not a, like...
There wasn't a ton. You know, you had the casino sequence, but, like, again, like, it was kind of different, and I'm looking forward to those in here.
This is the first time we see all three of them really adventuring together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be something special, something that feels like it's been building up to that, and we're going to get that
that's pretty cool.
Character human.
Agree.
Yeah, yeah, and I miss, like, The Force Awakens, like, that thing where it's all tense in the beginning with Poe and Kylo, and he's like, okay, who talks? Do you talk? I talk? Who talks first? I don't know how this stuff works. Like,
yeah,
I'm looking at that. Like, just seeing, like, and now the three of them are so comfortable in these roles and, like, have done this for so long and are such a, like, I mean, Oscar Isaac was already a pro, but, like, John Boyega especially and Daisy Ridley especially is going to be, like, much more comfortable. And just seeing that banter again. And I really did miss, like, the Rey Finn banter from, like, the first one, because that was, like, what made Force Awakens for me, which is, like, how good they were, like, riffing off one another. And them separated for so much of Last Jedi kind of took that away. But, yeah, so we're all looking forward to Star Wars. I mean, we're getting antsy. But don't worry. The Mandalorian is keeping us warm. Baby Yoda's filling our hearts with the Force until we get to The Rise of Skywalker. But, yeah, let's take a break because when we come back, we are going to jump into these new X-Men books. And we will bring in Brandon Davis to talk about The Walking Dead mid-season finale.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right. So up front, I'll be really honest. I only got through two out of the three. I did X-Force and Fallen Angels because I thought those were going to be the more dynamic. I thought New Mutants will just be me enjoying more irreverent New Mutants humor in space. But we'll talk about all three. Let's knock New Mutants. You guys can just take that away. Sell me. What is New Mutants issue two? Worth reading, Matt?
Well, I feel like it is. I know Jamie didn't love the first issue as much. I liked it more. I think I liked it more than you. So I feel like I'm pretty much the same. Like, I really enjoyed this issue as a whole. I know you liked it a lot more.
Yeah, right? I like this issue a lot better than the first one. It's the difference of when they were dealing with the Starjammers. So the first issue, you know, they jump in the Starjammers ship. They go off to space because they want to find Cannonball, who's been off in Shi'ar space. And the way they interact with the Starjammers, everything just felt really petty and like they were being immature. And then in this issue, you get to see them interacting with Cannonball, and everything feels much more like it has a youthful warmth to it.
Yeah.
And then Sunspot especially, he goes from just being kind of obnoxious to, you see that he's just really like misses his best friend and feels confused and is a little bothered by the fact that his best friend is, you know, grown up and married now.
And doing just really well.
Yeah.
Like, I just like that he's almost jealous of success. Like, he doesn't find this sad, mopey person. He finds, like, a successful person in the guard, and, like, he looks great.
Yeah, he wanted Cannonball to miss him as much as he misses Cannonball. Yeah. But, you know, Sunspot doesn't have Smasher and a kid at home, and Cannonball does. It's different. And it's a really interesting, like, New Mutants has always been about the young generation mutants, and so this gives it this kind of, this texture where it's kind of about growing up and this generational difference. It even kind of makes the stuff with the Starjammers retroactively a little better, because it feels like it's playing on that generational difference where, like, you know, Corsair's a lot older than all those kids. Yeah.
And they even comment on that in the issue, as far as, you know, when Cannonball, like, they're asking him, was like, oh, was it the Starjammers? And they're like, yeah, they go, they're terrible. Like, they're awful people.
Yeah.
Like, of course they did. I also just love that Mondo has, like, Mondo has a lot of powers, but Mondo is essentially, like, the walking cabinet. Like, he's become, like, that's all he does.
People just hide stuff
at the beginning of this issue. They're like, oh, where did the egg go? It's inside Mondo, because that's what they did from behind. It's like, wow, dude.
Hey, we're going to this club, Mondo. Hold my staff. Open up, buddy.
He's just like a giant
Don't squeeze this baggie too tight.
We should say, too, Rod Reese is fantastic. I hope I'm saying that right, Rod Reese.
This issue was great. I liked this issue more than I liked the last issue visually. I know you liked both.
Yeah, I think he's done, like, the first issue, I think he did the best job of drawing the Krakoa kind of in the same, getting that same vibe that the House and Powers artist and Marty Gracia did, because he colors his own work. And here he does, like, the space stuff, the spaceships, the Shi'ar bits, you know, just as well. And he draws this, like, emotion and vulnerability in all these characters. There's, like, shots of, like, when they all hug, the big group hug.
That's a great,
even when Rain is just sleeping and Sam and Cannonball are just talking on the couch. Yeah. There's all this real, like, humanity in all
they these feel like, yes, they feel like a family. They feel like real people. Especially that, like you said, that Ron moment where it's, like, three different shots. Mm-hmm. And it's Sunspot talking to Cannonball, and on the edge of the couch is her, and she's just, like, in different forms of sleep. So, like, one she's, like, making a noise, and the other one she's, like, out even more. And it's just one of those things. Like, it's a weird thing you look at to isolate, and you're like, why was that such a point? But it's just, again, it adds that level of, like, oh, they're a real family. This feels like I'm in my living room with superpowered people. So, yeah, very much. So that would be, I would assume, a win for both of us.
Yeah. All right. So, now, stuff I can talk about. X-Force number 2. Matt warned me going in that this book was going to feel a lot different. X-Force is, I feel like, in some ways, still the book that has the least amount of shape to it. It's just kind of like, it's almost like it's like X-Men. I mean, this is basically X-Men Blue and Gold right now, I feel like. I feel like the main X-Men book is one, and X-Force is like the other.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like one is just more kind of off of Krakoa adventures, and one is like Krakoa politics central. Yeah. But I don't dislike X-Force either issue just because they're so different, I still am intrigued by both, but it doesn't feel like there's a consistency to this book yet that I can tell, like, what's going to happen in the next issue. But this one basically just, like, it picks up with after Xavier's assassination, and it's basically almost like a cop show procedural of investigation. Like, how did this happen? What's going on? And it's like a two-pronged storyline, as Jean Grey kind of puts it in the middle of the book pretty aptly. Like, Wolverine goes off to do what he does, was like, use his fist to beat the crap out of people over this whole thing. And Jean Grey and, like, Celia Reese, Reyes, are, like, trying to use their minds and piece together. And they have one surviving assassin, and they do all this stuff. But, yeah, we get stuff about kind of the Reavers who are not quite the Reavers, that whole thing. But, yeah, this book had, so far, like, and this is saying a lot with House of X, is still, like, my most shocked, like, horrific ending where we catch up with Domino.
Yeah.
And basically find out that she's been getting the Ramsey Bolton treatment for,
after,
like,
seeing that, I had to flip back to the cover and look for the parental advisory thing because it is colored black, and on that bright, like, blue cover, you can't actually see it. I'm like, someone's going to make a mistake.
It's
going
to be bad. That
is gruesome.
Yeah,
that was one of the more gruesome things I've seen in recent comic deaths, or not even a death.
Poor Dom.
But, like, in memory, like, and just, like, you, and just making a connection that, like, they just stripped her skin off, to wrap around these assassins so they could infiltrate Krakoa and do all that.
So it gives, and Dean White's colors go a long way to this too. It has a very uncanny X-Force vibe.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Especially this issue. Like the first issue bugged me a little bit because the cliffhanger felt a little awkward. Based, like, we know people can be resurrected. They've established in some of the other books too that, like, they're not 100% certain it's going to work for Xavier, which feels like something we should have known in order to make that cliffhanger more effective. But now that they've done that, it all feels more genuine.
And also, I think this book did a good job of justifying that cliffhanger in the sense of they're not necessarily just worried about bringing him back or not. It's geopolitics. I mean, it's just geopolitics.
Yeah.
It's like, what happens if people begin to suspect that he's dead and he can't come back? If that fear begins to become pervasive, it's going to destroy this whole unity of Krakoa.
Yep.
Which is held together where, because remember, like, this is a nest where, like, Mr. Sinister and Apocalypse are, like, hanging out with Wolverine and Cyclops, and everybody's supposed to be copacetic about, and Cable, and, like, it's supposed to be copacetic.
Yeah.
And it's, like, and we already have seen there are so many cracks to this still. Like, nobody fully trusts everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's all kind of murky. And, like, from everything from the Hellfire Club to Apocalypse to Sinister to everything in between to the fallen angels themselves, like all that stuff. So,
and it's also to other nations as well, because their economic status, their status, he is the face and he always has been the face of them to other nations.
Yeah.
If you're, I mean, it's like anything else, right? Our president, you have approval ratings, or nations have leaders and their approval ratings go down and what, right? You have soft power. Those things, I like that House and Powers really delved into that and made that say, no, this is going to have a real effect. Because then that's why I wasn't as like jarred by that. Because in here, they do address kind of, hey, we have so long before everyone figures it out.
Magneto
and
says.
Then we're going to have to like issue statements and do things or whatever if we can't fix it in time. And Hickman did tease before that, you know, Jean, of course, was the one that would have the highest chance of doing it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't 100% certain. Yeah. You know, it was in one of those like nine paragraphs.
Yeah, and it's also the whole thing about things, you know, making God bleed, right? Like you made
Speaking
God
of,
bleed and now like Krakoa doesn't seem so invincible. The whole thing doesn't seem so stable. Like
Speaking of, my favorite part of the issue was the conversation between Kid Omega and Wolverine.
Yeah, I was going to
get to him. Where Wolverine is like, Magneto can go on with his God speech, but we're not gods.
Yeah,
these aren't like, devils, etc.
The best line is, you're really kind of freaking me out with how you're talking right now. Like, he's just like, look, man, like, I'm not down with the fanatic stuff.
And
like,
it felt so, well, that was the thing that I was like, when I was saying, like, this feels so different, was essentially them. They're part of the issue. Issue is so jarring because it's not like that first issue, but it's not in a bad way at all.
Yeah.
It's great, like seeing them juxtaposed. I love that. You
know? I never thought. I mean, I remember him from like the student perspective, but seeing them together, like kind of like this on a mission, it's almost like a. It's like Wolverine getting to hang out with like a Bizarro Xavier. Like somebody who's in the frame of Xavier, but like very different.
He's doing the Magneto was right bit, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And like, him and Quentin Quire, just like, it is great. It's very jarring, but it is like very funny.
I also just love seeing Wolverine try and hack.
Well, I feel like it went away.
That was great too.
I love that he was hunting checking in the artwork. But yeah, a lot of people, myself included, were like, it feels like some of these people should be objecting to some of the things they're doing, and Wolverine being one of them, and seeing him saying, like, I'm on board with what we're doing, even if I'm not on board with all the rhetoric, goes a long way towards making everything make a lot more sense.
And setting up, like, where this is going to, I mean, where the real splits and complications are going to begin about, like, okay, really, what are we? Like, who are we? I mean, the first time this, like, again, like, this Magneto Apocalypse Sinister type mentality begins to push against the friendlier Xavier side of it, like, is going to be really interesting. So X-Force, like, I thought did a good job of kind of still being weird, but like expanding things and adding to itself in kind of a fun way. Like I said, it doesn't feel like this book is consistent, but it feels like a lot of anything could happen and a lot of it will be kind of fun and interesting.
Yeah.
So I know we're coming up on the cover where like Jean Grey's going to have to attempt this Xavier resurrection, and there's just so much I like about Krakoa, about how freaking creepy it is. It's like the Lost Island. Like, you think you know it, and it's like this paradise, but then there's beasts coming out of the woods, there's portals to a demon realm or another island now, like, it's formed up, and these whole cradles of Xavier's are just these creep pads.
Man,
like,
that thing was creepy.
Yeah, you'd think living like, putting everybody on an island would have made the world smaller, and somehow it feels larger than it did before.
And just like, all your secret pits with like the vine, like all the roots like going up under the house. Like, it's just so crazy. So, yeah, man, X-Men's nuts, but X-Force is good. I think my biggest surprise was how much I actually came around on Fallen Angels. That was like down at the bottom and for me at the first issue. And I think it was the bottom. I liked Excalibur one a little bit better. But I came around on this issue, and I had to kind of eat a little bit of crow because I went on this whole stand like when issue one came out about how I didn't think Quanon was like a strong enough character to kind of carry the book and her story. But that changed a lot in issue two, mostly because I think we got to more practical things that I could relate to, like her in the field, like committing an assassination and trying to do this whole kill this guy and possibly save his wife in the noble thing. It was a little more interesting than just the rhetoric and the brainwashing of her training. It made the character more interesting and made her past. It looks like there's layers to her.
Yeah.
Up until now, it's just been like, I am ultimate hand assassin.
Yeah.
Like, I was trained to be ultimate killer. I am very dark. And in this issue, it kind of begins to show you a lot. There's a lot more gray going on inside of her, which is the crux of this whole book. And I think, even while I think the storyline was a little hard to follow in terms of like, especially when you got to the competing stories of like what they're trying to do versus what Cable's trying to do with this whole thing he's talking about and like this big atrocity that's happening. I think on a character level, it was a lot better. And I had to also eat crow on the second thing when I said that like X-23 and Quantum were too similar of characters that I couldn't for them to both have a personality when they're interacting. It's like one has to be dark badass fighting demons, and then one's like artificially the level-headed one. But in this one, they had a scene where they interacted and they talk about like, you know, when I was in your mind and relate on this whole, you know, we've been through this and the demons we carry thing that I thought was interesting and makes them good partners in this. And so
it was, and like when we talked about the first issue, that was one of my things of like, I hope it can, you know, the potential's there. I hope that it can start to explore those things, because otherwise we're running in place. And luckily, I feel like this took some big steps for both Quanon and X-23. My biggest issue with the issue itself is actually all the Cable bits. Now, it's funny, like the first issue, he was kind of really non, like he was really consequential in any way. And in this one, it's like, it's weird for me when I get X-23 and Quanon's basic thing is teach me how to, one, control my anger. And we've seen her have issues with that in the past. But this one felt a little more natural. With Cable, it's like, let me teach you to be a soldier. All this dude knows, he killed his older self for the timeline. Like, this guy knows what war is. Like, this, even though he's younger and he's a kid, like, this guy has done some kind of screwed up things for the betterment of the macro level. So I'm like, for him, it sticks out, and it's like his personality is just not clicking with me. But I really like the stuff. My favorite part is actually Quanon's second assassination, where they show that when she read the guy's mind, she then decided to save the, you know, the wife, and she's like, why are you helping me? You killed him. And she's like, I saw how much he loved you. And then there's this after part that's like, she died anyway.
Yeah.
Like, all these people attacked her, and like, I mean, they killed her, and it's like, why? And she has this whole little like self-reflection thing. And those bits, I think, are the most important going forward to continue to like peel back those layers. And there's another line where she says something like, it's about the butterfly. And like,
how she hates that her and Betsy Braddock both.
Yeah, we both. I dealt with it. I hated it because of what she thought it stood for. And actually, I had to admit to myself that I don't hate it. I just didn't like what she. Like, those little things are great. I just think Cable's bit.
He feels like a third wheel right now.
He does. And I honestly don't know how in a couple of issues they're going to fit two more. Yeah. I'll be interested to see, because right now it's you're still trying to get three, and you know, Bling and like I think Husk is coming in a couple of issues, so like it'll be interesting to see how they fit that.
I think that's why they're branching Cable into like this other storyline where it'll maybe hopefully make sense and give him like themes and stuff that will bring him more into focus.
This art is also an acquired taste. I totally get it.
This is a very unique.
Stop it's like focusing on the teeth.
The star of this book are teeth and shadows.
Oh, and eye, like giant eye shots. Like, and I'm like,
the artist
are you
has
doing?
Clearly gone to bed with some mezcal in your system, or like some mescaline in your system, or something. Like, yeah, it's all just like teeth, lips, shadows.
I've never seen such a close up of Cable's teeth. Like, it was so right there, and I'm like, oh, but
I'm not eating crow on this. I didn't love the first issue. I didn't love this issue. I think when the first issue came out, I compared it to like a early 2000s Marvel Knights book.
Yeah.
Where it's like needlessly dark and weirdly obsessed with like Asian stuff for like just the on a superficial level rather than on a really interesting level. I do not connect with any of these versions of these characters, and especially like X-23 after all the character development they've done with her. It seems like Hill in his writing is trying to explore something with her. There's a term for it that I forget, even though I was just reading about it, where like you feel in the moment and you are present in the moment, but also you feel like attached from yourself and everything around you at the same time. Like I said, there's a phrase for that, and he seems to be trying to explore that, but that feels like it's like turning back the clock on her character, making all the progress she made feel like that was all not real now, because they prefer her as
damaged, basically.
As traumatized, yeah. And it would be, I always say you can do whatever you want as long as you write the story well enough. I just don't feel like this is he's making it interesting. It feels regressive.
See, I don't read her as traumatized here. I read her as someone who has had to push back a lot of things. It's just very like simple human basics. I mean, you pushing back certain feelings to deal with situations. And even in All New Wolverine, she did that because Gabby was there. She did that because of other things, right? So, and I also would have a problem with it more if we were just coming off that book. But that character is not the same character and hasn't been for a little while since All New Wolverine. Like, as much as I adore Tom Taylor's
did feel
All
like
Wolverine,
they started ticking that clock back.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're just kind of,
it just seems like there is a ticking clock over X-23. I mean, her whole theme is to just try to figure out what she means in the context of Krakoa. And I think there is legitimate room for her to be wondering, should she be going off-island doing secret kill stuff and, like, clandestine, or be here and try to be happy, and what does that mean, and like all that, but we're just not there yet.
Yeah.
And like it needs to kind of move there quickly.
It seems like, I know this was in the first issue, but the line where she was like, I don't want to be in Logan's shadow, felt so completely out of character to me. But if you're going to run with that she doesn't want to be in Logan's shadow, it seems weird that she is doing
what Logan
exactly
would do.
The stuff that Logan would do.
If you put X-Force and Fallen Angels together, like, yeah.
That's very
it's
true.
It's pretty much just she is, you were doing exactly what Logan's doing.
Comparing this issue of X-Force to this issue of Fallen Angels that came out, it's really interesting because both books are dark, but one of them is dark with some, like, life to it underneath, and the other one just kind of feels dark for darkness's sake.
It's a very goth X-Men book.
I will say one of the interesting little things about it, and I don't, it was like a kind of a throwaway line, but Quanon at one point says that, like, she's talking to Cable, I think, and she says something along the lines of, like, we don't want to anger Krakoa because if we leave too many times or whatever, like, Krakoa gets angry, I guess. That is an interesting thing because I hadn't really thought about that, and it's been touched on in other books of, like, Krakoa knows when you leave and when you can come in. That's the whole thing. That Kitty Pryde can't come in, you know?
Was she talking about the island itself, or was she talking about, government?
It was unclear.
I think she was talking, because I think she mentions the council in that same dialogue. Yeah. And I think what she was kind of making the point that every time what they're doing right now, every time they go out, they are literally the people who are putting this whole thing in danger because they're going to go do some dark stuff.
Gotcha. Okay.
That could blow back on Krakoa. And that's why she's arguing with him about, like, what their actual first,
what's worth,
what's worth the strike, what's worth the risk. going after this villain whose name I'm already forgetting.
Apoff,
yeah. A real strong establishment there.
It's like the others.
Or should they be doing this Cable mission? And like, I think that's the thing that's also a really interesting thing about Fallen Angels. And I would like to see this happen. I would like to see them successfully do something, come home and be like, no, like, you guys can't come back here.
Yeah.
Like, not because we don't accept you, but you got, like, it's public and we got to publicly put you, like.
Yeah, it's a very military type thing of where we have to disavow.
We have to disavow you. Knowledge. Yeah.
Maybe they put them in the hole with Sabretooth.
You're IMF. We disavow you, Ethan Hunt. Sorry. Like, you're out on your own. And that
would
be
the 90th time.
And then just them against a world of, like, people knowing they're the only ones, like, not protected by Krakoa.
Now that's
an interesting.
Is awesome.
We just saved this book.
That's awesome. Now, if we get there, I mean, I already like where things are going, and I feel like it has a lot of potential. But if we get there, that is
because that's
an interesting spot.
That's interesting because it puts people who are violent like killers back against the wall when they're trying to like go through rehab on killing.
That like, is yes, I am all for
and
that.
And I would love to see that. All right. Well, let's leave it there. I mean, with our own writing of Fallen Angels, because why not? Jamie, you are going to step out, and we're going to get Mr. Brandon Davis in to talk about The Walking Dead, but thank you for joining us. We'll be seeing you pretty soon and pretty often. We got a whole bunch of Star Trek stuff. Jamie's our Star Trek expert, and that's coming roaring back in a big way in 2020, so you got a busy schedule ahead of you. But thank you for joining us today, and we're going to take a minute, and we're going to get Brandon in here, and we're going to talk some Walking Dead. Welcome back, Brandon Davis. We got 5 minutes to talk about Walking Dead. And I just want to ask you one question. We got to The Walking Dead season 10A, mid-season finale. Should more people be checking out this show right now? Because we got in ratings low, but
I gotta say,
I feel like it's kind of a travesty. I feel like The Walking Dead's been really good. And even though there are little storytelling things you and I were talking about we don't necessarily love the most, I thought this was a good first half of the season. I feel like the show should be getting more love.
Yeah, I mean, the show is season 9 was great. Season 10 is I don't think it's as good as season 9 yet, because if you really think about it, where season 10 started and where we are at the midway point aren't that different.
No.
But it feels like a lot has happened, so that's the difference between Angela Kang and Scott Gimple. Whether you like the All That War story or not, I think Angela Kang is just doing a superior job of storytelling. She made Dante and Sadiq's plot twist this season feel like it matters, and those characters don't matter. Like, think about it. They're sub-tier characters.
Yeah.
So to say they don't matter is wrong. She made them matter. And it was an interesting twist that doesn't really seem to have all that big of an impact on the show, but still was unexpected and fun.
First scene with Rosita and that whole figure and her stumbling on Dante and the baby, and like, yeah, that was intense, and it made you really care. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just too late, I think, for people to care. I think, like, they announced the title of the third spinoff show is The Walking Dead World Beyond, but at this point, I think putting the title The Walking Dead on something hurts its chances of succeeding, because people are just over it. It's been 10 years. I mean, it's very good, and I do say come back and watch it, but I just think they're at a point, like, the network is facing the problem of people don't care anymore. It's too much, and I mean, I'm still on board, and I think it's not as good as it's ever been, but it is very good. I mean, like, second best run of seasons, probably, maybe, like, I don't know how to compare that, but it's really good, and people just aren't really watching this. The ratings are awful.
Would it be better if they cut Fear for this new show? Like, can it support two? And not three.
Fear the Walking Dead season 5 was a travesty.
Yeah.
It was awful.
It was really bad.
It was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I had to slog through it. It was bad.
It sucks. And I love the cast on Fear the Walking Dead. I love people who make it. But the writing on Fear is just so bad. Like, it was just, they're painting trees. They're wasting Alicia Debnam Carey on painting trees. They're wasting Coleman Domingo, who was once the most interesting character on the show, as a con man. And he's just a yes man to Morgan. And Morgan was the worst part of The Walking Dead season 7, which is a travesty because Lenny James is one of the best actors on either show. So it's all kind of a mess over there.
Yeah, Fear has literally all the road in the world to use, and somehow went like nowhere except Stupid Town.
You think about this. Where was The Walking Dead when season 6 started? All the things The Walking Dead had accomplished by the time season 6 started.
Yeah.
Fear the Walking Dead is starting its 6th season. What has it done?
Stop it. Stop. I don't want to
see season three. Listen, I'll preface this because I feel like I just bullied Fear the Walking Dead unnecessarily. Fear the Walking Dead season three is my favorite season of either show.
Yeah, no.
I think it's a masterpiece.
The ranch arc is the best arc.
The dam and the ranch, that was all so good. And then they killed Kim Dickens, which was just stupid.
I mean, that's all they got left. They got to bring back Madison at this point.
Without Fear ended, with Morgan seemingly dead, the only way you save that show is if Madison saves Morgan.
Yeah, that's about the only arc you got left.
But anyway, yeah, people should be watching The Walking Dead. If you ever watched The Walking Dead and you jumped ship, you can start now. It's very good.
Because it's going to get annoying when like people go back just to finish it one day on Netflix or something, and they're like, then we got to get all these tweets like, man, this show was really good.
And I'll be like, here, I got articles. I got articles for you from 4 years ago. Here, go read these. No, it's really good right now, but it's just a shame no one's watching. It's a shame for the people who make it. Like, I mean, I know that they're working, like they work hard. And I mean, it's a shame for us because we write a lot about it and not as many people are reading it just because the audience isn't, it's a quarter of what it was.
Yeah.
So it sucks, but it.
Will the movie juice it?
No. They're taking so long.
Andrew Lincoln's smoking a cigar with some brandy and he's just like, yeah. He's looking at a movie producer and being like, now do you want to pay me that money?
Dude, I can't believe that they haven't announced anything for the movie yet.
Yeah.
They're announcing new spinoffs and Fear Season 6 and all this crap, and the movie nobody knows when it's coming.
That's really going to get you back in the game. So
it's been over a year.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep a lookout for that. But you heard Brandon Davis. If you guys are just looking for something to fill the holiday time, go back. Watch The Walking Dead Season 10. Do a little binge and, you know, check it out because it is better. Like, we've been saying this for weeks. But it is better. And so you might want to check that out. But thank you, Brandon. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are just getting involved with the show, we put up new episodes every Wednesday, every Friday on comicbook.com, or you can subscribe to our RSS feed, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. We're on everything. We can tell Amazon, Alexa devices, fire up Comic Book Nation podcast. Go on our YouTube channel for Comic Book. We're everywhere, baby. Just wherever you prefer to listen, just download, subscribe, and get involved. If you want to talk to us, you can hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Brandon Davis PD. And I feel like I should say you can find Jamie Lovett at Jamie Lovett.
Yep, Jamie Lovett is out there. And like we said, you got Star Trek questions, hit him up. That'll do it for this episode. Next week, when we're back after the holiday, we are going to be reading some 5-star reviews when Janelle Wheeler, she wanted to be a part of this. So when Janelle's back, make sure you also check out our Wednesday shows with Janelle. Because when she's back next week, we're going to read some of your fan 5-star reviews. So get those in over the holiday because we're going to be sending out some more t-shirts for all those great 5-star reviews.
10 t-shirts per person. No, that's not.
Are you bribing people for 5-star reviews?
I
respect that.
Yeah. I've been t-shirts and a hat. To do that since the beginning. We're like 100 episodes bribes deep now. Like,
you get a shoe from Jim Viscardi.
Anymore. It's just a tagline for the show at this point. But that'll do it. We got to get out of here. People got to eat turkey and see family and do all that good stuff.
Eat stuffing.
So, everybody have a safe and happy holiday, and we'll see you guys when we return. Peace.
Deuces.